You know, when I teach my letter writing class, I tell everybody who's taking the class, an email never, ever, ever, do you hear me? Ever, ever, ever takes the place of a handwritten note. Ever.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Real Estate, Wine, and More podcast. I'm your host, Howard Fletcher, and today I have a very special show for you. So wash your face and hands, tuck in that shirt, break out the English tea and some cookies, raise that pinky, mind your manners, and let's get started. Go downtown for a bucket of Nippon. Mac and cheese in a side of I wanna go downtown for a bucket of deck bones. They're right next door to the Taste of Free. Marianne Brennan is a dynamic, fashionable, intelligent, contemporary anachronism, and she's also a friend of mine. She and her business, Mrs. Brennan School of Etiquette, are on a mission to remind our often frenetic world of the credo that she has embossed on her business card, and it's no matter where we are in time, manners never go out of style. She was kind enough to take a little time out of her busy schedule to come talk to me about growing up in Washington, D.C., her journey to becoming one of the foremost teachers of etiquette in the D.C. metro area, and why we need better manners now more than ever before. So with no further ado, here's my conversation with Marianne Brennan of Mrs. Brennan School of Etiquette. Enjoy. Okay. Well, I'm here with somebody who I've known probably for the last 20 to 25 years, would you say?
I'd say.
Yeah, yeah. Her name is Marianne Brennan. In fact, I've known you so long that... How long have you been married now?
Don't tell my husband I didn't know this. Okay. I think like 11 years.
Yeah, I was probably about that.
I've dated him for 20, though.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I had your previous name before Brennan in my phone. Just recently I changed it. That's how long I've known it. So, and she and I have crossed paths in D.C. for several years. We have a lot of mutual friends. And every time I speak with her and I learn more about her life, I find it quite astonishing because she is quite the Renaissance woman. And those of you who listen to my program know that I have been speaking with people who do very interesting things. And I think that defines definitely what Marianne is and does. So I'd like to welcome you to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Now, we're both natives to the area. But tell me a little bit about yourself. Your family's been in D.C. for quite a while, isn't it?
So I'm the fifth generation, and now my daughter is the sixth.
Wow.
Even though she lives in Baltimore. My great-great-great cousin founded Georgetown University, John Carroll. And we grew up right down the street from the university on O Street, very Catholic Irish. And I had an uncle who was the wrestling coach at Maryland for 30-some years.
Yes.
And my other uncle who played pro football. And he played for the Giants, the Steelers, the Eagles. I can't remember them all. Detroit Lions. And his wife, who they had had four girls, said that if he didn't come home, she was going to divorce him. Okay. So he ended up his career with the Redskins.
Okay, I thought he played for the Skins.
Yes, Ray Krause. Okay. So he was leaving as Sonny Jurgensen was coming in.
Ah, okay.
That'll give you a time frame.
Okay.
So I grew up with lots of big men in our house.
Wow. So tell me about, really quickly, since you brought us back there, what was D.C. like back then? Or let's talk about Georgetown. What was Georgetown like then compared to like now?
Yeah, it was so fabulous. I always say, I think, when the Kennedys came to Georgetown, that was the thing that really was when it took a different course.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather was a carpenter. We were all very middle class. I mean, there was great wealth in Georgetown, but you never knew it. Like, mm-hmm. people would have Chevys parked outside their doors. it wasn't the opulence that it is now. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew each other. Everybody helped each other. We never locked our doors, which is, you know, back in the 50s and 60s, a lot of people were like that around the country. But it was just so different. In order to have a shop on Wisconsin Avenue, you had to be like the primo shishi shop.
Yeah.
And if you were sort of like a downgrade from those, you got on the like O Street, N Street, but definitely not on M, not on Wisconsin Avenue. Mm-hmm. And that was the difference. It was just, I always say it was a sleepy southern town, of which I still feel like it is, but now it's become global. That's the difference. It was sleepy southern, and now it's global because we have so many people from so many places that are coming. I honestly like it the old way. You know, I used to go buy my sneakers at this little cobbler on Wisconsin Avenue and I went to school with all the kids, the Bredicis, but it was Bredice. And every summer I'd go down and buy a new pair of sneakers, and I'd never have enough money. And Mr. Breed, I said, oh, just bring it back when you have it. You know, kind of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Feldman on the corner with the DGS, and you had like an account where you just signed, and they'd send you a bill at the end of the month. So it was all very small, homey. Everybody knew each other. Mm. And it's just, it's not like that anymore.
Yeah, yeah. See, I grew up with the shishi, big shishi, Georgetown. In fact, I was born the year Kennedy was assassinated.
Oh, wow.
So it was established. If that was the turning point. It was established, you're right. Then it was established. But I do remember all the individual shops, mm-hmm. which aren't really in existence that much anymore. Right. I mean, it's almost like an outdoor shopping mall.
Right.
Where it did have a lot of character in the shops, even though I wasn't going to stores where they would put it on my tab. You know, those days were gone by the time I got down to Georgetown. No. So, all right. So you ended up working for the city. Am I correct?
I did. I was a policewoman.
Oh, wow.
Back in the early 70s, I was actually one of the groups that first went out on the street. Mm. And from a gal who had been in nothing but Catholic girls' school her whole life, this was an education. That, I must say, was well needed. Absolutely.
We mean the footbeat?
Yeah, the footbeat, riding the scout car. I had downtown, like 10 to 14, G to K, all the shops that used to be down there. Once the convention center went in, it like eradicated, like, I don't know, I don't know the exact number, but it was something like 400 and some businesses that were put out of business. Mm. And so all these little shops, like I had Capital Key Shop on my beat, and I was one of these people that walked a beat and went in and checked on every business to see if they were okay, did they need anything, what could I do for them. And I really took pride in that, in making sure everybody was safe and everybody was sound. And
now, how many women, you might know the number, because I would think there was a small percentage of women on the force at that time, well, especially that would walk the
Right. Well, what they used to use the women for were pretty much like sex crimes or problems with the little children, mm-hmm. things like that. And they mm-hmm. always had desk jobs. They weren't out on the street. And so then this equality thing came around. Mm-hmm. And we ended up being put in scout cars, and I rode the paddy wagon for about 5 years.
Wow.
So, or 4 years. So it was wonderful. I have to say, one out of all the jobs I've had, I loved it. I really loved it. I think it's scary what it's turned into now. I would be afraid to put the uniform on now. Hmm. And I don't know, it was just a great city back then. It was a great city to be a police officer in, especially in the district.
Right.
Because you had, you know, the government, the president. I worked in SOD for a while, which handled all the, you know, situations that, you know, Special Operation Division, it was called. And so you'd escort the president and all the sort of hierarchy things of the department. And it was great.
well, you know, I know this is an audio medium, but those of you, if you go to the website, I'm going to do a piece on Marianne, and we'll have a picture of her on there. But I was always surprised when you told me that, because while I can tell that you can handle yourself.
And I'm an excellent marksman with my gun.
Oh, okay. That's always good to know. I couldn't tell that about you, but that's always good to know. You certainly aren't what, you know, if I, and I hope this doesn't sound bad, but if you said, well, I'm one of the first women on the D.C. police force and I used to drive the paddy wagon, I would have thought of a woman who was pretty well, you know, pretty big and stout enough, but.
Well, actually I was. So when I first went on the department, mm-hmm. I was a little stout. Mm-hmm. I hate the word FAT.
Okay.
Chunky sounds better.
Okay.
But halfway through that, what I decided to do was I wanted to model. And so I lost like 70 pounds.
Okay.
And went into modeling on my 2 days off. And also did my 5 days of the police work. And as time went on, I built up my modeling career, ended up leaving the police department after a sizable amount of time, because I just knew I didn't want to do it for 20 years and retire.
Yeah.
And it changes you. You know, you always get called to all the bad things, never the good things. And it does take a little off you. And so I decided I wanted to do this modeling, lost all this weight, and got with a really great agency here in town. And that just took off.
So, I mean, so you have to tell me, how do you go from a person with a gun on her hip who is stout, as you say? I'm going to take the liberty, or I'm going to assume that just to look at you at that time, especially in a police uniform, you wouldn't say, hey, there's a model right there. You made yourself into a model.
I decided that's what I wanted to do.
So what was that? My question is, what was it?
Because I've always loved fashion.
Okay.
Since I was 8 years old.
Okay.
I've always loved it. Mm-hmm. I think the reason I ended up joining the police department is I was so disenchanted with all the like secretarial jobs I had had. Mm-hmm. Nothing was a challenge. And the gentleman, I was working at the Mayflower Hotel, and the gentleman who ran security also knew my family. He had been a police officer in Georgetown. And he would come in every day and sit down and have a cup of coffee with me. And he said, now, Marianne, they're giving the test. They're giving the test to join the police department. And I'd be, Pat, please. No way could I ever do that. Well, he must have come in at just the right moment. And he said, you've got 2 weeks left to take the test. I said, I'm going down. Where do I go? So I went down, took the test, got on, and it was history from there. And I loved every minute of being a policewoman.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, if you look at my history, I've done a lot of things. And I think the reason I've done a lot of things is I enjoy life.
Yeah.
And I enjoy experiencing all these little things.
Yeah.
And so what led me into my present job was I was doing a lot of work for Garfinkel's. It was a big major department store.
Oh, I remember.
You remember, right?
Yeah.
White glove and the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
Well, this particular season, they decided to take like seven models and strategically place us in all their stores. Hmm. And at the time, they had just opened up their store in Annapolis. Yeah. So for a solid month on a Saturday morning, we would all be distributed to all these different locations, and we would teach the young girls who were broken down into three age categories etiquette. Hmm. And it was a smashing success. We took the little teeny ones, and then we bumped into like the 10 to 12, and then we bumped it up to the teenagers.
Now, about what year was this?
I would say it was probably around 79,
okay.
80.
Okay.
Late 70s, early 80s.
Okay.
It was fabulous.
Yeah.
It was booked to the hilt. Mm-hmm. And so what they would do is they'd bring their daughters in. The mothers would just shop around for an hour. And at the end of the 4 weeks, we would let all the little girls go in and pick out a little outfit, and we'd put a fashion show on for the parents.
Okay.
And it was a win-win.
Yeah.
Their children learned what fork to use. They learned how to dress properly. And the store, I mean, I'm telling you, every mother bought the child's outfit. Yeah. I can assure you of that.
I'm sure they love that. Yeah.
And so it really was a win-win. Mm-hmm. And it was exciting. The dads would come at the end of the month and see their daughters walk down the runway. And I'm really surprised. I actually approached a couple big department stores here in town to do this again. Mm-hmm. And they really weren't interested in doing it. And therein lies the problem.
Yeah.
And that's a whole nother story. We got an hour and a half to talk on etiquette.
We will get there. We will get there. Okay. Well, so you're modeling and you're doing this work with Garfinkel's. When was it that you decided, and you were doing the etiquette work with the Garfinkel's.
Right.
Thing. But when was it that you decided to branch out and make it something that you would do yourself?
So I had gotten married. I married a DC police officer, mm-hmm. and I decided I wanted to start it up again. And I would hold classes in a hotel because I didn't have a brick and mortar place. Mm-hmm. And about a couple months into it, I ended up getting pregnant with my daughter.
Happens.
Yes, it does. And that was sort of the decline. So all that sort of got put on the back burner for a while. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up, you know, as a single mom, getting divorced from my husband, but a single mom. Mm-hmm. And I was really just having to work and concentrate on, paying for education,
sure.
all those things that we all do here in the city.
Yeah.
And it was just no time to do that, really.
So when did you start it up again?
So I've continued to model for the last 40 years. Mm-hmm. I've never really stopped that. I probably took a sabbatical of like 10 years off when I was raising my daughter. Mm. And then as I've slowly come back into that over the last 10, 15 years, and I can tell you exactly when it was. I was coming back from New York. I had done this TV show up there. And as I always say, if my mother had known the production of this show, I would have been put in my room for a month.
What was the show?
No, I never. Well,
okay.
Let's just say lots of vulgar language.
Okay.
No nudity.
Okay.
Let's get that out of the way. No nudity.
A lot of stuff happens in New York. That's
yes,
my
I know.
Yeah, so.
I know. Okay. So, anyhow, I'm coming back and I'm looking out the window and I'm thinking, what has my life come to that I'm. You know, because in that business, you really pretty much take everything that's offered to you, mm-hmm. unless it's just really drastically against your morals. And I have done that, too. I have mm-hmm. refused to do things. But I'm coming back down the road, and I'm looking out the window, and all of a sudden, this light bulb goes off in my head. And it's about a video about a young boy's Catholic school over in Northeast. It's called the Washington Jesuit Academy. And I remember seeing the video of it and watching the boys, watching the parents interact on this video. And what went through my mind is they need to be taught etiquette. Not that it was anything disastrous, mm-hmm. but you know, like most of the dads are not in the household for a multitude of reasons. And these children are really being caught before they go between the cracks. Mm-hmm. And so now we're saving these young men. I had a girlfriend that worked at the school. I saw her. I said, I'd like to come over and look at the school. I was over that next Monday. Within a week, they had me coming over teaching the boys etiquette. And I think I'm now on my 9th or 10th year over there. And so I wasn't sure if I wanted to teach it again because, number one, I had always taught little girls. I had never taught boys. And I thought, well, this might be a good way just to see if I'm still loving this. And I fell in love. I fell in love with the school. I fell in love with the people who run the school, who started the school. I fell in love with these boys. I call them young men. I don't call them mm-hmm. boys because mm-hmm. I'm trying to, you know, chin up here. Mm-hmm. And I just have been back. And every year I'm put in a different spot. I don't care. At the end of the season, I get one of the restaurants in the city to host us for an etiquette luncheon. Riss at 23rd and L did it for probably 8 of the 9 years. This year we're going to Joe's Stone Crab House.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'm excited. I was telling the boys the other day in class they have to wear a tie.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to take a break now. And then when I come back, when we come back, we're going to talk about your how this business has evolved and about etiquette and the need for etiquette in 2020. So we've got to be right back.
Hey, I wanted to take a moment to invite you to check out my website, The Faces of Bethesda and Chevy Chase. It's a blog where I write about people who live, work, and interact primarily within the communities of Bethesda and Chevy Chase, but really all over the DMV. In my 19 years as a realtor, I've met some of the most interesting people that I could ever imagine, and I'd like for you to meet them too. So please go to thefacesofbethesdaandchevychase.com or thefacesofbcc.com. Also follow me on Instagram at Howard Fletcher Realtor, or go to my Facebook pages, Howard Fletcher, which is Fletch Lives Too, or Howard Fletcher Realtor. There you'll find great information about real estate in the DMV, learn more about the guests on my show, and also get some more information about some of the wineries and breweries that have been on my show and that I've visited. Also, always check my show notes. I always will have links to good information and definitely information about my guests. And so with that, let's get back to the show.
Okay, well, we're back with Marianne Brennan. When you told me that you teach etiquette, you know, it struck me that that's a word. Not only is it probably something that's not taught as much, but it's a word you don't even hear that often.
Right.
So first, talk to me about etiquette. What is it? What does that mean to you? And what is etiquette?
It came really from the French, Louis XIV. When they were trampling over his tulips, and he made the gardener put signs out, like to have etiquette, not to ruin the...
Oh, wow.
I always tell the boys that.
Yeah, no, I'm glad I asked.
I know, it's good to have history behind it.
Yeah.
I don't even know where to begin on this. When I was a young girl, I was sent away to boarding school in third grade.
Mm-hmm.
Every night at 7 o'clock, we reported to this particular room where we had 30-minute etiquette classes, and that was part of the curricula. It was past the 3 o'clock hour. That didn't matter, because the nuns who taught me felt that that was just as important as math is.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes just, it makes me sad that we've lost civility, that we have stopped talking to people in civil tones, that we have now taken the place of, you know, the old verbiage, we used to agree to disagree. Well, that's not it anymore. Mm-hmm. People can't have their own opinions anymore and not get into a fight. And it saddens me. And that, along with a culmination of both parents working, kids, and look, I had a car full of kids taking them to basketball practice, and we would stop at McDonald's and get chicken nuggets. So I get it that we all don't sit down at the dinner table anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But all of these little things have eaten away at the civility of our country. Guys now are afraid to hold doors open sometimes for women because they get snapped at. I make it a huge point that when a guy opens a door for me and holds it, I give him like a 2-minute dissertation of how wonderful it is that they're still gentlemen. Your mother taught you well. Keep holding the doors open. I don't care what anybody, I mean, I go on and on and on. I mean, isn't it nice, whether you're a girl or a guy, to have somebody hold the door open for you? or where have we gone with all of this?
Well, that's true.
But I also think that part of the reason we've lost it is we're all moving too fast.
Yeah.
We're all doing too many things. We're all running from this to that to this to that. We don't sit down and eat, you know, dinner at the table anymore. I mean, I get all that. That's, you know, society has changed in that respect. But I feel that manners should not change.
Yeah.
You know, when I teach my letter writing class, I tell everybody who's taking the class, an email never, ever, ever. Do you hear me? Ever, ever, ever takes the place of a handwritten note. Ever. And so I teach the young children how to write the notes, words to use. I mean, they're not even teaching cursive anymore to the children.
Yeah.
The joke is, this young boy called his dad up and said, "We're going in to get my driver's license. Can you teach me how to sign my name?" I mean, think about that.
Yeah.
And so all these classes I teach, I'm trying to keep them up with all the wonderful things that we've had that's kept us going in a civil manner all these years. When it comes to table manner lessons, what's the first thing you do? You put your napkin in your lap. You know, basic things, elbows off the table, keep your mouth closed when you eat. One of the greatest questions that was asked to me by one of my young men at the Jesuit Academy, the hand goes up, and I said, yes. And he said, "Well, you're telling us that we must let the lady order first." And I said, "Absolutely." And he goes, "Well, what if she's taking too long?" And I thought, well, that's a legitimate question. And I said, "You practice patience and you wait."
Yeah.
So, and I teach on everything. Everything from A to Z, soup to nuts. How to behave in the gym. Which I know you're a gym person. I know you could probably throw things on that table.
There's a lot of bad behavior in gyms. Yes.
Yeah.
So how are these lessons received? I mean, you're starting in on that. I mean, these young men,
yes,
are the societal norms eroding, that it's not being reinforced or taught very many places other than with Miss Brennan.
Well, are a few around town that are still around.
Okay.
I know there's a lady in Potomac that does cotillion, this is what I say. Anything we teach our children is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel that how to eat a tea cookie, we have more important things to talk about than how to eat
Is there a certain way to eat a tea cookie?
Well, so I'm told that's what they're taught. And look, I am not making fun of this woman who is doing the teaching and how to ask a girl how to dance. I mean, I laugh. I talk to my daughter who's like 33, and I said, "You guys don't even dance anymore, right?"
Yeah.
So we need to teach the children how to be respectful to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And when the parents finally get around to calling, and I do all kinds of venues. I go to schools. The principal at St. Mary's on Rockville Pike has me every September to come out and talk to all the young children about good etiquette and talk to the eighth graders of how they should behave when they go around town looking at prospective high schools. That's a huge, wonderful class that I teach. I take one-on-one to restaurants. Billy Martin had set up where on Saturday mornings I can bring a group of children in and we can do table manner lessons. I've been to country clubs, sitting at a private table with the children while their parents eat at another table. I can custom make anything you want. A lady on Capitol Hill had me come over one Saturday night with six girls, little girls, and we went through all the, you know, do's and don'ts with eating at the table. So anything you want, we can do. I just am a big, firm believer that we need to start teaching these children manners again, how to write a thank you note. Because I have grandparents say, "I'm not sending another gift. I didn't even get a phone call."
Yeah, yeah. Well, we had to write that. I mean, I write thank you notes, and so I learned that from my parents.
Yes.
But we teach that here in the, you know, we're recording this here in my real estate office, and, you know, I think I always smile because in sales, you know, and this isn't just this office, I mean, just in general, when you go to these sales seminars, they talk about the strength and the power of the handwritten note.
Yes,
you know? Yeah. And I'm kind of shocked that you have to tell so many people that, but
Because they're not teaching.
Yeah.
I mean, I teach the children how to seal the envelope with wax. I don't send any letter out without a wax seal. It's just... And I
You're
always...
You're hardcore.
I am hardcore. But I also tell all these eighth graders going to prospective high schools, get a teacher's name, get the principal's name, write them a thank you note, seal it with wax.
Yeah.
They will remember you.
Oh, absolutely. I can't remember the last time I received a letter with a wax seal.
Yes. Yes. I'll write you one tomorrow.
That's wow. No, they do. Now, at one time I did fool around with sealing wax. I have to confess, I may have to start doing it again, but I haven't for a long time. But I think every single note that I mailed off with sealing wax, I heard back from the person.
Absolutely.
You know, if nothing else, just to get a comment about the sealing wax.
Right. Well, this is what I keep telling the children. You're going to do something that no one else is doing today.
Right.
And you will stand out above the other 300 people that are either trying to get into this school, trying to get this job. I tell it to the young adults that I go in and teach, and I've been called in to talk to them about proper office dressing, that they're not dressing, you know, being a good office mate.
So how are these classes being received by your students?
They love it.
They
love it.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes it's because they've never heard it.
Yeah.
And you have children sitting in these classes that honestly want to be successful. Mm-hmm. And so they're soaking it in like a sponge. They want to know.
So we'll ask this at the end of the show as well, and I'll also be in the show notes. But if somebody wants to get in contact with you, Marianne, about these etiquette classes and how to schedule them or even what you have to offer, where can they go?
Right. Just go to my website. It's Mrs. Brennan's School of Etiquette. Mrs. Brennan's School of Etiquette. And I've got 5 pages on my website. It breaks it all down, what I teach, what I offer. There's some pictures of some of the students and the curricula. And just give me a jingle, and we'll talk and make it happen.
Good, good. I will put, they'll be in the show notes as well. And you can always email me if you have trouble getting to that website, because we do need this etiquette in the world. Before we go, I wanted to talk to you about your volunteer work, because I know it's very important to you, and it seems like every time we run into each other, you're telling me about something else you're doing in the community. So tell us, what do you do?
So I think probably the longest running volunteer job I have had, which has been over 30 years, is at the Georgetown Senior Center. Mm. And I found out about it reading the Georgetowner 30-some years ago. It was a little group that was meeting. It had been a government-funded group, and they were closing it down. Mm. And it was being held in a little church on the east side of Wisconsin Avenue. This woman decided to take it upon herself to reopen it on her dime. And she needed volunteers. And so I showed up one day at the church, and it was a small group, and she was feeding them bologna and cheese sandwiches on white bread that she had gone out and bought. But the camaraderie in there was just amazing. And I told her I would be back. And I called a friend of mine who was very successful in the city, and he ran parking lots.
Okay.
And I invited him to come over the following Wednesday to take a look at this place. What I was really looking for was a donation, be honest.
I was just thinking, he probably has some of my money. Yes. And he runs parking lots in D.C. Yes. Yeah.
So he shows up with a gentleman who was running NS&T, Joe Riley.
Oh, wow.
And Joe Riley and Bud Doggett. I'm going to say their names because they're now deceased. And I had a little bottle of Cutty Sark where I made them a little drinky poo so they could view what was happening.
Okay.
The next day, Virginia Allen, who was running the center, she had a check from both of these gentlemen for $1,000.
Wow.
And that's sort of what got it going.
Okay.
And Virginia Allen, I take not one thing away from her. She was absolutely amazing. We had people like Clyde's having us down for Thanksgiving dinner. We still had Billy Martin's. God love Billy. Yeah. Every time I call Billy, everything I ask for, he's right there for us. He has us down for Christmas luncheons. Virginia Allen died about, I could be wrong on this, but okay, about 6 years ago. And we have really struggled to keep this going. Mm. And so everybody has their little part they're doing. And one of the ladies who is a senior who comes to the center, her son wrote us an extravagant check to keep us going for like another year. So we're just trying to keep this wonderful spot. We meet at St. John's Church on O Street in Georgetown every Monday and Friday.
And so if somebody would wants to, is listening to this and wants to support the Georgetown Senior Center, should they just show up?
Absolutely, then? They can show
or,
up.
Or is there a website or is there a...
There is a website, okay, the Georgetown Senior Center.
Okay.
So we meet at St. John's Church, as I said, 11:30 in the morning. They have, you know, the seniors sit in the chair and they have like chair yoga. Mm-hmm. And then we go into lunch and then we go into a little entertainment after lunch. And we've had people like Kitty Kelly over there talking about her book. Sometimes we'll have, famous other authors mm-hmm. come by and talk. We'll have musicians come in and play their cellos. I just recently went back to my alma mater, Holy Trinity, up in Georgetown because they used to send the young kids down. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to the principal up there and he said, oh yeah, we've got this great a cappella group that we can send the kids down to entertain the seniors. So I'm getting back and hitting the pavements again, trying to, you know, so we can, we need cooks, we need seniors. You know, God knows, there's got to be right. seniors sitting in those big houses by themselves in Georgetown.
Well, that's what my next yeah. question was going to be. Is like, are most of the participants there or the clients there, are they from the Georgetown community or do they come from all over the city?
No, they come from all over. And years ago, I used to drive the van that picked the seniors up. And I can remember going way up Connecticut Avenue to pick the seniors up in the little apartments up there. We still have a van. It's kind of thumping along. So we still pick up people, and I'm not a cook, but I could whip up spaghetti and a salad and some bread. So wow. every once in a while I'll go in and cook.
Yeah.
So we need cooks, and you know, we can use there, but we definitely need seniors. We want a place for these people to come around and have fun with each other. They take a lot of trips. They pile on the bus. And we'll go into Old Town and eat at a little restaurant down there on a nice day. But it's just something for them all to do.
Sure.
And they are amazing.
Yeah.
And they're so knowledgeable. Like, you could sit and talk to them for 2 hours and never be bored.
Yeah. Okay, so. Well, if anybody's listening, and I guess I'm going to have to go down there as well, because it sounds like they're eating better than bologna sandwiches, so I'm definitely going to show up.
Yes.
to do some work with them. And I think that's beautiful. So, Mrs. Brennan, I appreciate you coming on the show.
Oh, my. It's been such a delight. Thank you, Howard, so much for even having me.
Oh, no. It's been I always learn something when I speak with you. As much as I think I know about you, I always am surprised about more things. And now I know the origin of the word etiquette as well, so I can pull that out to, you know, I don't know, impress my girlfriend or something. So with that, I'd like to say till the next time. And if anyone is interested in those etiquette classes, please, once again, let's go to Mrs. Brennan's School of Etiquette.com. And I will talk to you later.
Take care. Thank you, Howard.
Bye-bye.
So there you have it. That's my conversation with Marianne Brennan of Mrs. Brennan's School of Etiquette. I hope you enjoyed it. I certainly did. We could have talked for a couple more hours, actually. I'd like to thank Marianne for coming down to my office in Park Potomac to record the episode. If you want to contact Mary Ann Brennan, please go to her website, MrsBrennanSchoolOfEtiquette.com. There's a link in the show notes. And if you're not writing personal notes, longhand, in cursive, and sealing them with sealing wax, you need to go right now. While I'd like to call this a one-man show, there are several people who I'd like to thank, without whom this little project, it would not be a reality. Thank you to all my colleagues at the Caldwell Banker Residential Brokerage office at Park Potomac. They were very well behaved while we recorded this episode, and I really appreciate it. All the music on this episode, my theme music, Tasty Freeze, and the transitions between and during the commercials were written and performed by Cadillac Grip. If you're ever in the Boulder or Denver, Colorado area, please go see Cadillac Grip play. Because if you ain't hip to the grip, you just ain't hip. If you like what you heard, please give me a 5-star rating on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. It helps the show grow, and it'll really help me out. So please do that right now and go tell your friends. And again, subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. And if you're not subscribed to the show, what are you doing? I'd like to thank my partner and editor for life, Joan, a.k.a. the Notorious Jay-Z. And I must thank my mother and Jack, the Black Pug. The Real Estate, Wine, and More podcast was written, recorded, mixed, produced, and screwed up by me. I'm Howard Fletcher. See you next time. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
An email never, ever, ever, do you hear me? Ever, ever, ever takes the place of a handwritten note. Ever.